Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Griff. In today's show, we'll be talking about conscious compassionate awareness, responding to your email questions, and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry Huber.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
Great. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a lot on our plate today. We have a gazillion email questions here.
That's the official count at this point?
Yeah. I've rounded a little bit, but somewhere around gazillion.
Gazillion, okay, good.
And I have a big, long list here of bookstores and other organizations that are supporting and promoting Open Air with Sherry Huber.
That's so great. Will you tell people what that's all about and then tell us who they are?
Yeah, sure. So these are bookstores that carry Sherry Huber's books and are excited about what we're doing with Open Air and Living Compassion. And they have a display set up in their bookstore or yoga studio or organization. And we're encouraging people to call in from those places.
That's great. So somebody goes into their local bookstore,
yeah,
and they see this and they get information about Open Air Talk Radio,
yes,
and then they can call us, and they can say to us, and I heard about this at Mom and Pop's bookstore in my neighborhood.
Yeah,
and then everybody benefits. So other people listening know that bookstore is a place that's supporting Living Compassion and
yeah,
and Open Air, and it just works well for all of us, doesn't it?
Yes.
That's very
more
good.
More support for practice and for being present, which
yes,
I think is really great.
Yeah, and businesses, bookstores, and yoga studios, and that sort of thing, who have the same goal of living conscious, compassionate, aware lives, and we support each other in letting people know who we are and what we're doing. So it's all good.
It's all good. Would you like the list?
Love it.
We have Valencia Street Books in San Francisco.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Valencia Street Books. I know them.
You know them.
I do.
We have East West Books in Sacramento, California.
East West.
A great
good
place.
As it gets.
A great place.
Mm-hmm.
We have Diesel, a bookstore in Oakland and Malibu.
Yes. This is a list of old friends.
A list of old friends.
Yeah.
And hailing from Durham, North Carolina, we have the Regulator Bookshop.
They've been around forever. And
forever.
They've all been fabulous.
Great. We have from Austin, Texas, Book People.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I just saw them when I was recently there.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. We have in West Hollywood, California, the Bodhi Tree Bookstore.
Again, that's a grandparent of bookstores.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the best.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go to these places when I'm traveling around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We have in Mountain View, California, East West Bookstore.
Yep. The very best. The top of the top for me, having been a Mountain View resident for so long and loving that place on every level.
Yes.
Just a pleasure to go in there.
Yes. In Pleasanton, California, we have Town Center Books.
Love it. I was just there about 3 weeks ago.
Good.
Yep, just stopping in to see them.
Good.
Yep, I should have bought a little something, but, you know.
You know.
Yeah.
In Sonora, we have the Mountain Bookshop.
My gosh. That's great.
And way over on the East Coast in Bronxville, New York, we have Bronxville Books.
Okay. Now, I've never been to Bronxville Books, so that'll be my goal
for my next
trip to New York.
Great.
Okay.
And in Asheville, North Carolina, we have Malaprop's Bookstore.
Yeah. Home away from home.
Home away from home. And finally, in Denver, Colorado, we have Highland Yoga.
Highland Yoga. Wonderful, wonderful folks. We just got to meet them when we were out there, three weeks ago.
Good.
Lovely folks.
Good. Great.
Good yoga.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited about all of our supporters. And
yeah, I hope anybody listening in who gets to anywhere near one of those places goes in and says hey to somebody and, you know, we heard them talking about you on Open Air and, you
yes.
know, do better than I did. Pick up that book you've been looking for.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful. Thank you for that, Michael.
Yes, sure. Sherry, I have some good news.
What's that?
We have a caller from the other side of the pond, so to speak.
Excellent.
England. I'd like to welcome Anna from England. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Anna.
Hello. Hi, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you so well. Don't you love technology?
I'm amazed.
This modern world we live in.
I thought it would be really complicated, and it's not.
No. Well, what's going on with you, Anna?
Okay, well, firstly, I just wanted to say that I really appreciate all the books that you've written, Sherry. Really, I really, really, really appreciate them. And to Michael for the radio show as well.
Thank you.
Okay, then. But there were two parts of me that were sort of here today, and one of them was really scared to call, and the other one was really excited about bringing my question to you. So I'm glad that that one held through.
Aha.
What it is, it's a question to do with art. Are you still there?
Yes.
Still here.
Yes? Okay, it's a question to do with art and how awareness practice fits in with art. Art is what I do, specifically painting and drawing. And I've been thinking quite a lot and struggling quite a lot lately with how it seems to be the opposite of awareness practice.
Ooh, say more about that.
I will do. Well, what it seems to be in the actual act of painting, it seems to be that I'm sort of not really here, that I go somewhere else. Everything seems to sort of be different. Time seems to change, and sometimes it goes really fast, and sometimes it goes really slow. But it is different to usual time. Everything seems to be very quiet. Whatever is going on around me, I don't want to know because I've sort of got this work to do. I've got this painting to finish. I find it difficult to pull myself away from it. I might get very frustrated if I have to do anything else, sort of like cooking, cleaning, shopping, and I may have to stop myself from being grumpy with my family.
Okay, may I ask you about that?
Sorry?
May I ask you about that?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm wondering if you're describing two different states.
Uh-huh.
One, you are, it feels that you're just completely absorbed in what you're doing.
Yes. Yeah, everything narrows down to what I'm doing, and the whole world just becomes what I'm doing.
Yes. And then the second one that you're describing is uh-huh. one where you are very attached. Now, if you can hear that without it being a loaded word, okay,
uh-huh.
you're very attached to what you're doing. You want to be doing what you're doing. You want to be working on this painting
uh-huh.
and finishing it, and you resent anything that interferes with that.
Yes.
So in the first one, you might forget to fix dinner.
Yes.
Simply because never occurred to you that it was dinner time.
Yeah.
You have no idea what time it is. In the
That's
second
right, yeah.
one, you know exactly what time it is, and you don't want to stop doing what you're doing to have to fix dinner.
Uh-huh.
Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, go ahead. I just wanted to make sure that I was with you.
Yes. So, So the problem with me for that is that it's as I say, it seems to be sort of the opposite of awareness practice, because I don't sort of seem to be here, seem to be somewhere else, and there's all this grumpiness involved, and it seems to be the activity of the painting seems to be all about me.
And, about you.
Sorry?
About you?
Yes, it seems to be all about me, like a selfish act, which again seems to go against awareness practice. Because I want to paint, so I'm going to paint.
Yeah.
For me, and not for anybody else.
Yeah.
And I have a voice that comes. It's a really loud voice, and it tells me I'm being selfish. So I stop painting, and then I feel unhappy.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. Are we ready?
Yes.
All right. You know, I talk about everything in life comes from one place or another. Okay? Uh-huh. And I mean, there are two places that everything in life comes from.
Uh-huh.
The one place is egocentric karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
The other place is center.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I would guess that painting would also, that would be the case for painting. So
mm-hmm.
I have all, now I'm not an artist, so I don't know, although I think I have a lot of artist karma, but I'm not mm-hmm. sure that counts. So I have always speculated thusly. Somebody who is considered a genius in any realm, it doesn't have to just be creative, but we see it most often in the creative realm.
Mm-hmm.
So a painter who through the centuries has been acknowledged as a genius, they, mm-hmm. this person has created at least one masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or the world of music or that sort of thing. I think more those. Although it could be sculpture or that sort of thing, but not the written word. To me, that's another discussion. But let's just go
mm-hmm.
with those two, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The person who has a masterpiece attributed to them, I would say, is painting, drawing, sculpting, whatever they're writing, music, playing music, from the place that people call the zone. Okay, now I think, do you know what I mean by that?
No.
Okay. It's a place that people describe, and there are levels of this, okay? So it has become popularized and trivialized, but what I'm talking about is this one,
uh-huh.
where there is a feeling that what's happening has nothing to do with you. It's simply coming through you. Like, you are, well, one of the most famous examples of this actually is in the world of sports in this country, and that's Michael Jordan, the basketball player, who speaks very articulately about being in that space where it's as if it would not be possible for him to do something wrong.
Oh.
Okay? He takes the ball, he feels the ball, his body goes into position, he makes the basket. It's as if the basket and the ball have their own relationship, and his body is simply facilitating that relationship. Okay? Or a person is writing music, and they're simply hearing the music inside their head and writing down what they're hearing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe afterwards, they go back and they hear a voice saying, oh, well, you know, that needs to be this or that needs to be that. And often, they won't make a single correction in what they've done because they realize it's transcendent. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was just given to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, this is a very Zen experience.
Right.
Okay, so that,
mm-hmm.
We're in the moment. There we are. There is no separation between the artist and the art. There is no separation between the artist, the art, and the rest of life. It's just seamless and flowing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that second experience that we were talking about, I project, is coming from outside center. That's the one where I want to do this. This is all that matters to me. This is the most important thing. If I don't get to do this, I'm really unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That experience, I would say, is akin to, and then we can talk about lots of these if we want to, but I bet we don't have to. I am in a committed relationship. I have just met someone that I am wildly attracted to. Mm-hmm. I am going to pursue that relationship regardless of commitment, morals, good sense, social pressure, threats of hideous things happening to me in the future. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I'm obsessed, and I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know that place?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't think about anything else. I don't care about anything else. This is okay. To me, even though in the world of popular culture, that reaches the level of a transcendent experience.
Mm-hmm.
Pure ego.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when I trained, I did art as a training at university, and then I had my daughter, and I tried to carry on painting, and I realized I was coming home from the studio and being really, really horrible, and I felt that I just couldn't do the two, and that my daughter was actually more important. I found it difficult to do the two, so mostly I've been bringing up my daughter. She's getting quite old now, so I'm sort of getting back into painting.
Yeah.
But there was it is that obsession, you know.
Yes.
I sort of had that.
Yes.
Forever.
Right now, see, to me, what people think is, and the voices will help you think this. Okay.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I can't do that because this is how I get.
Yeah.
So in other words, I have to quit my job because this person I'm obsessive about is at that job and I can't control myself.
Right.
No, that's not the answer. The answer is I need to live my life from center, where I see how ego pulls me into obsessiveness, and I learn how to step back from that, not believe it, not get hooked in, and be able to be at choice about my life. So for me, with anything artistic or creative, the work is for us to get out of the way so that life can experience through us what life wants to express, not our ego getting in the way so that our ego can take what life has given us and use it for its own egocentric purposes.
Mm-hmm.
You with me?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So it doesn't really matter what it is that we have a tendency to get obsessed about. Our work, and you know, as you well know, some people get extremely obsessed about their children.
Yes.
Yeah. And to me, that's not healthy either, although, again, in the world of popular culture, that is really idealized. You should sacrifice your life for your children. They're the most important thing in the world. Your children are actually the only children who matter. To me, that's not coming from any sort of a loving, compassionate, centered place. It's just ego using something like a child to take over and create an egocentric life.
Yes, 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 I can see that, yeah.
Yeah. So your work, as you know, is to do your art from a centered place. And periodically, you'll disappear into that place where it's just life living you. And there's nothing else going on except whatever is there. Okay?
Right.
And then you'll pop out of that, and ego will try to take over, and you'll see how that works. And then you're working, once again, to come from that, just let everything go and let life express through you.
Okay.
All right?
Yes.
It's a plan, huh?
Yes.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Oh, it's wonderful. I'm really, really pleased that I did. And thank you for being there, and thank you to Michael as well.
All right. Well, we look forward to hearing how it's going.
Yes, I have tons and tons of other questions. I don't really get a chance to call because I have to be up usually very early in the mornings, but I don't tomorrow.
Good, so you're up in the middle of the night taking advantage of this.
I'm up in the middle of the night instead.
Okay, thanks, Anna.
Okay,
thanks for joining us.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're at the end of our first segment, and we'll be right back with you in just a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness, taking your calls, and responding to email questions. So please keep it tuned here to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. And Sherry, we have another caller on the line.
Who do we have?
We have Xi and Ma.
Wonderful.
I'd like to welcome you to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Oops. Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Is the connection okay? It's kind of, as soon as you picked up, it kind of faded on my end.
We hear you loud and clear.
Okay, well, then I'll just live with the echo. Actually, I called to report back.
Good.
Just a little background. It's been so interesting. I think maybe things just develop the way they develop, because there's been a lot of, I think I spent a lot of time identified lately.
Now, you want to stop for just a second here and tell folks what you mean by identified.
Like caught in conditioning, caught in these various parts of my subpersonalities that believe scarcity for one thing.
Scarcity?
I mean, they have different sets of beliefs, but not having really lost the feeling of well-being and peace that comes from center.
Okay. So did you say scarcity is one of the beliefs?
Oh, totally.
Yeah, okay. So, right. So you're going along and you're centered or close to center, and life is fine, everything's okay, and then you slide over into this aspect of your personality who believes that scarcity is what is really true. And suddenly you're looking out through that subpersonality's eyes, and the world looks like there's really not enough, and you're not going to make it, and whatever.
Yep,
and you really believe that that's true when you're identified with that person.
Yep, and it feels really familiar.
Yeah, sure.
So anyway, but finally, it's almost like in the last couple of days, maybe I've come, it almost felt like there was some coming too. So today there was some stuff that happened that, but I finally got to, wow, there's so much energy running right now. And to just sit with the energy, and then the email class, to follow the email class and start writing down, because self-hate was just really, like, pummeling me.
Uh-huh.
And so, in the meantime, there's been this gourd. I mean, I was interested in your discussion with the woman before, with Anna, because there's been this gourd that's kind of been gestating, who's, that, you know, it's just like it's been there, but I haven't given myself time to bring it out, that is about innocence.
Uh-huh.
And so then my brother sent me a note and said that my father is going to the hospital tomorrow. And so I'd been practicing with the tape, because this was 2 months about that I called and you suggested, you know, doing the tape with the reassurances, and I'd been practicing, but I think it was conditioned. It was somebody who was just telling me, well, you haven't practiced enough, you know, don't call, you haven't practiced enough.
So helpful, isn't it?
Yeah.
So helpful. Instead of, and of course she's saying that tongue-in-cheek or sarcastically or however we would want, because we know that anybody who was on your side would be saying to you, okay, all right, maybe you haven't practiced enough, but call. Get all the help you can get. There'll be some support out there for you. Just pick up the phone. Reach out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But
well,
no,
and so that's what finally happened, is I think that voice, that inner voice, it was almost like life had just kind of, getting my brother's note had just kind of like pushed. It's like, all right, it's time to call now. I mean, it's okay, I haven't practiced as much or what. It doesn't matter. It's just time to call and see what happens.
Uh-huh.
So I actually called him. I mean, I did what you said. I put
I see. You called your father.
Yes.
This is not wanting you to call us.
No.
But it's saying don't call your father because you haven't practiced.
Yes. Yes.
Got it. I'm right there with you.
Yes. You haven't practiced and something awful is going to happen or something.
Yeah, some vague, the sky is going to fall, life is going to end, yeah, some awful thing.
Yeah, and so I just find, it's like, wow, well, if I haven't, like, just been sitting with these really intense sensations for most of the day and just coming back, and so I put on the reassurances on one side, and, you know, I called with the other ear.
Yeah, so you made your tape. And on the tape, it says all the things that you need to keep in mind when you talk to this man with whom you have this traumatic relationship. So you don't want to just listen to his voice and get into the conversation, and that's all that's going on, because you're going to get identified.
Yeah.
Right? So here you have this tape playing in the other ear, reminding you to breathe and come back to yourself, and it's okay, and all of those kinds of things as you're in this conversation that's so upsetting, or potentially upsetting.
Yes.
Has certainly been upsetting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, because when I called in February, what I'd seen was the last time I called him that I had so many intense sensations in the body, I had just, like, backed off and said, I can't talk to you anymore. So it's just interesting that today there was just so much body stuff going on, not him as a content, but just, there was just so much sensation. So I called him, and it's like there wasn't a nasty sensation.
Surprise, surprise.
I was like, wow, and I just heard him, and I heard his voice, and I haven't talked to him for some months, and it's like he just sounded like such a frail old man.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't sound like anybody I knew, Sherry.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I knew in, you know, any particular way. He just sounded like this poor, scared old man who's kind of getting a little senile and is going to the hospital tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what you're saying is so valuable for all of us. So here, when you're identified, you're stuck in this place that, it, you know, for each of us, wherever we are in our life, can be 20, 30, 40, 50 years old. Okay, we're stuck right there in this relationship that was so painful to us when we were young. Then life goes on, but because karma, because conditioning, keeps us in the same place, in that same relationship, in that same internal conversation, we fail to get information that says, life has gone on. This guy is not scary any longer. He's a frail, on the edge of senile, scared old man. But if conditioning had had its way, it would have kept you in that same relationship, that same little child scared of her father relationship, until after he died.
Yes.
At which point you would have got information about what a horrible person you are, because you never were able to go beyond that so that you could forgive your father, so you could be in relationship with him, whatever the voices would tell you you had failed at.
Yeah.
Yeah. But because you're paying attention and because you're doing awareness practice, you have another shot at it.
Yeah, it was this, I was so, and I felt so much compassion for him. And, you know, the funny thing is we only, you know, I did the 2 minutes thing. I told my mother said, I talked to her first, and she said, would you like to talk to your father? And it was like, yes, for 2 minutes. So I talked to him, and he asked if my practice was helping.
Wow.
And I said, yes.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, that, you know, that was like, and, you know, we had probably a minute or 2 minutes of conversation. That was it. But he brought it up. It was so amazing.
Yep. Yep. Now, of course, it doesn't mean that both of you have dramatically changed and you're going to be in this new centered place forever together. Right? Because that's the next thing the voices would like to have us believe. Okay, then, it's a brand new day, and that means, you know, essentially, you can just go to sleep again and not think about it because your father isn't that person. He's this new, different person, and so you don't need to worry about any of that stuff. When in reality, you need to pay really close attention in every one of those interactions for as long as you both live.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, well, yeah, because somehow, we know what felt different this time, Sherry, is it's almost, besides not knowing him, so probably, maybe it's maybe the one of the few times I've actually talked to him where I haven't been identified with a child part.
Yes, yes,
that
yes.
I felt solid. I mean,
yes, you felt centered.
Solid, like the body existed. I was in something. There was some solidity in the experience.
Yes.
Rather than this kind of waving
frailty
on my end.
Yes. Yeah, you're solid. You're here. You're present. You're remembering who you are and what you want to bring to this relationship. You're staying conscious. You're conscious all the way through the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in that conscious place, you're going to have a chance to see all kinds of stuff. Here's the thing that you want to watch, aside from being talked into going back to sleep. Okay?
Okay.
You want to watch the voices try to talk you into feeling bad about all the time you've wasted. Don't go there.
Oh, well, they've already been beating me up for this. This whole last 2 months of not calling him, there's been somebody beating me up.
Yep, yep, yep. So that's where the focus is now, right? You might have whatever number of conversations you want to have with your father, and you're going to be conscious. You're going to practice being conscious and present and centered throughout. And you're going to watch really closely what the voices try to do to take you back to a place of feeling bad in the face of this success.
Yes. So your suggestion is to practice talking with him more with the reassurances, whatever, and then...
And watch how the voices...
He already went to, oh, and I hope you're going to come home.
Yeah.
And from where I was sitting, it was, yeah, I could consider, I mean, I would do that.
Sure. And maybe you will and maybe you won't. But you can certainly say, well, sure, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, and then there's a voice, and I'm not sure where it's coming from. There's a voice going, well, how am I going to take, you know, it's one thing to have reassurances playing in one ear and talk on the phone in the other ear.
That's right. It's harder to do that in person, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, this doesn't mean anything. It just means that you're in conversation with him.
Yes.
That's all. That's all it means. Doesn't mean you're going home. Doesn't mean you're getting the car. Doesn't mean anything. It means that you're in conversation with him and that you're going to practice having really centered conversations with him.
Yes.
And you're going to watch how the voices try to take this back to a place of failure and feeling bad. And then you're going to keep us posted.
Okay. I'll do that.
Excellent.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks for the report.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jin Ma. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Another great show today, Sherry.
Yeah, and I'm really glad for that call because, you know, we often say now, call us and let us know how it goes, and then we never hear from people.
Yeah.
So it's really good. People are out there. You know, we talk about something, and they're going to take it as a practice. They're going to practice with it for a while, and then they're going to let us know how it works so that we can take the next step together. It's really good.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation about conscious compassionate awareness, taking your calls, and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, for once, I'm excited to say that we have no callers in this moment.
So I would say that opens the door for an email question.
Yes, it does. Dear Sherry, I saw you 2 months ago at a bookstore in Asheville, North Carolina, and that 1 hour has really opened and changed my life. The events that occurred to me during the 4 weeks that followed were extremely difficult. Having listened to your talk and purchased several books, which I read cover to cover, it really helped me through this tough time. Here's my question. I consider myself a person who loves to continually grow, and so your work aligns with my passion. But my issue is that my wife does not share this same passion. In fact, she is one of those people who always sees the glass half empty. I remembered something you said that evening. You said something like, let your personal actions be an example of the plan rather than using words. So I've been trying to do just that. Am I on the right track, the track that might yield the objective? I guess I am assuming that all humans want to grow emotionally and want to talk about it with someone who cares and loves them. Is that reasonable? I really love her, and I have tried to accept her just as she is. I just can't help but to think she would be happier if she could just leave the baggage behind and not be afraid of opening up. Any thoughts? From a listener in North Carolina.
Well, tons of thoughts, of course.
Uh-huh.
First of all, you know that bookstore was Malaprops, the one
Malaprops.
That you mentioned just a very short time ago. And I'm really, it's great to hear that he was there and, you know, I had a good time that evening, so I'm glad something like this came out of it for someone.
Yes.
And so several points about what he's asking. Number one, I don't think it's true that everyone wants to grow. That's not my experience. Now, maybe at a level that they and no one else is able to access, that's the case. But certainly there are an awful lot of human beings who are absolutely devoted to not growing, to avoiding change, to maintaining the status quo. So I think what we all do want, whether we know it and can articulate it or not, is to be unconditionally loved and accepted exactly as we are. Which to me is the thing that opens the door to growth. So if, you know, I'm trying to talk to you or I'm just being how I am, and I'm constantly getting information from you, whether it's verbal or just, you know, you roll your eyes on occasion or you sigh a little heavily or, you know, you look long-suffering, whatever it is, I'm getting signals from you that how I am is not okay with you. What that's going to tend to do is cause me to just dig in right there. Because you don't understand me. This is giving me signals that you don't care about me, which is kind of true. You know, your caring for me is not unconditional. You actually have an agenda for me. You want me to be different. Well, people have wanted me to be different all my life. Thank you very much. You know, all of us could say that's been true for all of us. Life has been a series of negotiations, of compromises, of avoidance, of strategizing, of whatever it is, to try to survive the rejection that we receive for how we are.
right? Uh-huh. I mean, in the most loving relationships, that's what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, I'm your mother. You know, I just love you to pieces, but I really wish you were a little more huh-huh. Okay? Or it really concerns me that you are that way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it comes from a place of loving you. I'm just concerned about you. It's really for your, it's really in your, you know, in out of a concern for your best interest, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is it comes from my standards, my own insecurities and fears, my anxieties, my unexamined whatever it is. And it really has nothing to do with you. I'm just projecting my stuff onto you.
Yeah.
And I think I would feel better if you would be different.
Yes.
Okay? And none of us do well with that. We just don't.
Yes.
So if we're in that kind of relationship that he's describing, which clearly he feels himself to be, then the practice, from my perspective, is to unconditionally love and accept two people.
Yes.
Himself and her.
Yes.
And it's not a matter of, well, in order to love this one, I've got to sacrifice this one. No. It's like having two children. And I don't get to sacrifice one for the other. I have to figure out, my job is to figure out how to love both of these children unconditionally.
Yes.
And it's huge. It's a huge undertaking, and it is certainly doable. It's exciting when we look at it that way, when we take it out of the realm of a contest. You know, it's out of the realm of the judge, out of conditioning's hands.
Yeah.
So it's not being watched constantly to see, how did I do that? How did, you know, did I? It's, okay, my job here is to unconditionally love and accept two people exactly as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that is not skillful or successful is something that I'm learning from.
Uh-huh.
I cannot fail because my heart is in the right place.
Yeah.
My intention is for goodness, and I am going to proceed, and I'm going to learn every step of the way, and I am going to become more and more skillful. My unconditional love and acceptance is going to expand moment by moment by moment.
Yeah.
And it's a glorious undertaking. It truly is. And the difficulty we always have is not with the child, with the partner, with the parent, with the difficulty we have is always with our egocentric karmic conditioning.
Uh-huh.
Always, always, always.
Uh-huh. So bringing it back to ourselves is really helpful.
It is really helpful. And that's why I say it's for two people.
Yeah.
So if the way conditioning would have it set up is, okay, now I need to bring unconditional love and acceptance to her, which means I have to judge and criticize myself every step of the way, watch myself, see how I fail, beat myself up, so that I can be an unconditionally loving partner to her. No, that's not what's going on. I am learning to come back to unconditional love and acceptance moment by moment by moment by moment by moment. And every moment, of course, that I'm doing that is a happy moment, whatever I perceive her life experience to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I don't come back to that place of unconditional love and acceptance for both of us, I'm not happy. And it's really not because I'm not the way I should be, and it's not because she's not the way she should be. It's because I'm in the grip of egocentric karmic conditioning, and it makes me unhappy.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Wow. Thank you, Sherry.
That's good, huh?
That was very helpful.
There's a life plan for each of us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Exciting life plan.
Yeah, you know, egocentric karmic conditioning really lives by the divide and conquer philosophy.
Uh-huh.
It's always looking, it is separation, and it's always looking for separation. It's trying
uh-huh.
to get it, it's trying to do it, it's trying to maintain it.
Uh-huh.
So it wants to put a wedge between me and you, it wants to put a wedge between me and me, it wants to put a wedge between me and it. You know, it's just looking for separation everywhere. And as soon as it can get somebody into that dualistic this and that, you and me, us and them, suffering is assured.
Yes.
And so that's the importance of bringing the compassion to me, bringing the compassion to you, bringing the compassion to us, bringing the compassion to them. So including, connecting, bringing together, wholeness, oneness.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've gotten through one email question, and we have another caller.
Life is good.
It's good. I'd like to welcome Jolie from York, Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Good evening, Sherry and Michael. This is Jolie from York, Pennsylvania. I had called, and I'm realizing why, at least from my experience, why it's hard to call back, because you did solve my problem with your recommendation, and another one sprung right up right behind it.
So, don't you love that?
I can't give you a glowing success report. That's what maybe everybody's waiting to be able to call back and say they've been enlightened. And but I had called about
let me reassure you. We are process people.
Okay.
We just love process. So it's like if you're a gardener and you love gardening, you pull a weed up, you don't consider it a mark of failure that another one grows in its place. That tells you that it's really good ground and lots of stuff will grow there really fast. Some of it that you are happy is there, some of it would you wish were kind of on the other side of the fence. But if nothing grew there, it would not be good information.
Okay. Well, you had talked to me about forgiveness, and you had given me some suggestions of the gotcha board of when egoic thinking is, conditioned thinking is getting the better of me, keeping my eye on that, and when I'm able to recognize that. And I did have success with my biggie forgiveness issues. I've been having great success, and lo and behold, all the little relationships are now more problematic. That separation issue is just like magnified because I'm trying so hard to not be thinking like I'll be talking to somebody and they want to gossip, and I mean I'm just like so horrified. It's like I'm struggling so hard within my own mind not to judge, and then somebody starts to gossip, and I mean it's almost like I can't run fast enough away from them, and so my world is shrinking. So what I was hoping you might talk about more, and I've got your stack of books here, so I'm sure it's in here, and I'm just not quite sure what to reference right now, but more about that unconditional love, the basis of it, what I can tell myself when, you know, I'm with people and they're exemplifying things that I myself am struggling so hard to not engage in, and
yes.
and they are, and I'm separating.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, now, again, you know, this is process and it's awareness. So in Buddhism, we actually have a little expression to describe what's happening to you. It's called going farther and faring worse.
That's it.
So the more aware you become, the worse it looks.
Yep.
Yeah, because there was a time when you could just sit around with folks and just gossip up a storm, and it was not a problem. Okay, and now, oops, I really don't want to do that, and now what do I do? So my encouragement to you is to remember that all we're doing here is paying attention and practicing awareness. We're not really deciding to change.
Right. I guess I need to write that down in a post-it note because I read that and I'm happy every time I read it in one of your books. But
yeah.
Apparently I'm forgetting, so I'll put it on my computer.
There you go. Yeah, write it in really big letters, actually. Get a big post-it and put it somewhere. Yeah, so all we're doing is seeing how things work.
Right.
We're seeing how things work. And as you become more interested in how things work, gossip just naturally kind of falls away because you're really more interested in the process of the conversation. So you don't have to try not to gossip. You with
right.
me?
Right, yes.
Yeah. And each thing that you encounter in your life is going to be that way. So to me, the really exciting part of this is everything that you're seeing about yourself, right? So you see yourself not even noticing that you're gossiping, I mean, just to take it down to the simplest thing. And then you become aware of gossip. And then you become aware of how much this gossip. And then you're aware of who gossips and how you're drawn into that and what that does and sort of what it means and how you don't want to, but then how do you not? And what does that do to really? And it just, it's like your world is just expanding and expanding and expanding and expanding as you see. So, so if we do something like I've got a glass of milk here, okay? And there's the glass. And where did the glass come from? All of the components of the glass and all of the people who made the glass and all of their relationships, we would span the globe, okay? And then there's the milk, and there's the cow, and there's the cow in the pasture, and all of the animals that the cow is related to, and the relationship of the cow to the people, and that, can you get a sense of that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that, to me, is what you're looking at. That's okay. The potential of this. So you don't want to get focused on, I shouldn't gossip. Because that brings it down to this really small, confined, constricted, dualistic, right and wrong, good and bad place, when what we're doing is expanding it to see how something like gossip will travel around the globe. Even gossip is proof of our oneness.
Yep. Oh, that's good. And my what just arrived in the mail today was How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything workbook. And I think I'm in the and just got it today. I think that might be part of what you're talking about, this whole looking at the process as opposed to making the change or doing things, but being aware. So
exactly.
I even have the tool right in front of me.
You've got a tool right there. And,
oh,
you know,
okay.
If you live kind of in a non-stop message of things like, this is great. This is great. What you're doing, look at how your awareness is expanding. Look at how much you're seeing now that you didn't see before. Isn't this amazing? Look at all these connections.
Oh, yes. And you had said that, and I'd been thinking about it in a previous conversation where you said when we are looking to the outside to give us confirmation or it's because we're not giving it to ourselves. So now I got two post-it notes here to put on my computer.
There you are.
I'm so kind, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jolie. You have been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and another great show, Sherry.
I just love the thought of people being out there, you know, meditating and doing the workbook and sitting with groups of people and practicing awareness, and it's just so wonderful.
It is wonderful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And it's very energizing and supportive for me.
It is. Deepens my practice week after week after week.
Yes, yes.
Let's do it again.
Let's do it again.
I feel committed. Another week.
I'd like to thank all of our listeners and all of our callers today. It's great to have you with us. If you'd like to email us when we're not on the air, you can reach us at openair@livingcompassion.org. And we'll talk to you again next week.
See you then, Michael. Thanks.
Thanks, Jerry. Bye.
Good night.